With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, third hour. Tiki and Tierney company from the Tiki and Tierney Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Home is much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams, and for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage. Push button. Get mortgage on this President's Day. Beautiful shot of New York City, or is that Jersey? Which side is that? I can't quite tell. The sun was reflecting. Either way, tri-state area, if you're watching us here on the Tube, locally and nationally, all the affiliates, radio.com, CBS Sports Network, Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 Eastern on the simulcast. CBS Sports Radio, YouTube, many ways to follow us here on the show. And we just put up our Facebook, which we started about 5 weeks or so ago. Mm-hmm. Once a week, Tika and I do a little truncated segment for Facebook that's right on CBS Sports under the umbrella on Facebook. So go check it out. Today we talked about Mike Tomlin and Myles Garrett, and we'll get to that coming up next segment. But right now, you know... Boy, this is a strange one. It was a strange hiring.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about John Beilein and the Cavaliers, and I know he's going to meet with, may have already concluded by now, he's meeting with Dan Gilbert, the team owner, today.
Yeah, I would think so.
And the reports are he's obviously going to be out. And talk about a strange, short journey. 14-40, dead last at the conference. And you expected this was a team with training wheels, young team.
Oh, of
which
course.
Is why I thought it was on some level somewhat interesting to get a teacher in there.
But does that ever work?
Man.
Does that ever work? You know what I mean? Unless you have like a bona fide star that's going to come in and get it right away and, you know, not necessarily be caught up in the rah-rahness of having a college coach. Unless you have that player... This doesn't ever work, does it? You know what I mean? We've seen it
with
over.
With the college coach?
Yeah.
And now there's a report Jay Wright might get the next job.
I saw that.
I don't think that's good. Well, I don't really know. But I love Jay.
I do too. I just don't know if it'd be the right move for Jay.
Well, I think he wants to coach the Sixers.
It'd be a good move for the Knicks.
Yeah, I'd open the door for Jay.
I just don't know if it'd be a good move for Jay to go there.
I'm waiting for the Sixers job.
I would agree, which we believe that it will happen unless Brett Brown somehow gets them to the Eastern Conference Finals and they start playing more consistent basketball. But, you know, BT, when you look at, like, college coaches, they come in, they've been doing things, especially a guy like Beilein, who's 60, what?
Seven.
Seven?
Yeah.
He's doing it a certain way forever.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden you're going to say, all right, go jump into a professional locker room, a professional organization. Yes, it's a lot of young kids, but there's also, like, a Tristan Thompson. There's a Kevin Love who's got an NBA title. Both of those dudes got NBA titles. They've been in the game for, you know, almost a decade, right? Whatever it is that you did in college that worked at Michigan, it is not going to resonate with those two guys.
Mm-hmm.
Period. It's just not, right?
Unless you're winning.
Unless you're winning, but that's not...
That's not Beilein's fault.
But we knew that they weren't... You know what I mean? You knew that they weren't ready to win.
Yeah.
And so... Why have Kevin Love on the team? Why have Tristan Thompson on? Like it didn't make any sense.
Nope.
If you were going to hire John Beilein, who was a really good college coach, you had to like strip down to babies. You know what I mean?
I totally agree.
And they didn't. And as a result, you got this disconnect. And Kevin Love never says bump ever.
No,
ever. And now all of a sudden he's speaking out against your head coach? Mm. Something's really wrong. Was the first sign.
And that was an early sign, too.
Yeah.
Let's get this straight. I mean, just because John Beilein is probably... I think that this happens tonight. John Beilein will not be coaching the Cavaliers by tomorrow. I don't think. And if it drags into tomorrow, it won't drag into Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
But let's not get this twisted. John Beilein, you know, for my money, is still one of the absolute best coaches I've ever seen.
There's no doubt about it.
Ever. He's done it at every conceivable level.
That's right.
I mean, you look at he's gone everywhere. He's mm-hmm. Division II school, LeMoyne, junior college, Richmond, which has a nice academic profile,
yep.
but not a huge, robust basketball or football budget necessarily. I mean, then you go to you West Virginia. You turn West Virginia around. I mean, that was one of my favorite teams. That was the Pitsnoggle team that
That's
I always referenced. I loved that team with Mike Gansey. His son Patrick was on the team. Herbert was the point guard that he brought in from Germany. That team, I mean, that team was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he goes to Michigan with an incredible academic profile and wins a ton there.
Yep.
John Beilein can coach. The problem is, and to answer your question more directly about college coaches failing, it's very simple. You take over a bad roster, and you generally take over a roster that has been overseen or directed by petulant ownership. Because you think, John Calipari, right? So, now the Cavaliers wouldn't hire another college coach, but let's say the Knicks really are thinking about Jay Wright.
Yeah.
All right? Let's say if that report is accurate, and let's say somehow Calipari comes to the forefront, even though I know he refuted that a couple of days ago. But let's just say Calipari or Jay Wright are coaching the Knicks next year. If the Knicks, the draft, who knows? This is an interesting draft, but there's no Zion, but there's going to be a star somewhere. If the Knicks got lucky and they got a Ja Morant type or a Zion type or a real difference maker type, then John Calipari or Jay Wright will be successful.
Yes.
If they get somebody like, Frank Ntilikina, they get a bomb. And it's just a matter of how long James Dolan or whatever owner sits with them because you're paying them big money. It's the wrong situation that these college
but
coaches
it rarely,
jump to.
But it rarely is the right situation. A new coach comes in because the team is bad. You know what I mean? And the rare example is Steve Kerr. Now, he wasn't a college coach, but I'm just talking about in general. A new coach comes in because something bad has happened.
Mm-hmm.
With the Golden State Warriors, it was like they were on this plateau and just couldn't jump over it. And they realized that Mark Jackson, or at least they opined and told us that Mark Jackson wasn't the guy to get him over that hump. Steve Kerr just took it that extra step as a new head coach, first-time head coach. To be clear about it. But for most college head coaches, the situation is, look, we're going to be young. We might as well get a guy who knows how to deal with young players.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go get a college coach.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just not the same game that you're coaching, you know, and it's not the same.
Well, nor does Beilein speak a language that's going to necessarily resonate with young NBA players.
That's right. Even a guy
Calipari, sure.
Even like a guy like Colin Sexton, who yesterday when he was talking during the All-Star weekend, we don't have sound on this, right? This is just we don't have the actual sound. So this is just his quote here. He says, quote, "You know how he is. He's very detail oriented and it's detail, detail, detail. He loves details and he always wants us to make sure that when we get out there, we're giving it our all. Like, come on, let's give it 1,000% every day." Like when you're in college, you can do that. Let's give it 1,000%, guys.
Yep.
Let's go, coach. In the NBA, they look at you cross-eyed.
Even if you're 20 and you haven't done a damn thing.
That's right.
You have to know when to take your foot off the gas in the NBA.
That's right. And it seems like he didn't because he's 67 and he's been doing it a certain way for as long as he's been doing it.
Since the 70s he's been coaching.
Exactly. So when you look at a guy like, and so we're trying to think of like, who has been successful as a college coach. And Brad Stevens.
Brad Stevens has been
pretty
good.
It really makes you appreciate.
He's not the only one, though. Rick Pitino. I mean, Rick Pitino was coaching at Providence, and when Rick Pitino took over the Knicks in the 80s, they were actually pretty good.
Yeah.
But they were pretty good.
But
I mean, that team was pretty good.
But he didn't last.
Well, because he went to the NBA.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
He got paid.
I know.
He got paid by the Celts.
True, but he didn't last at the NBA.
Well, actually, Kentucky had to bounce around a little bit, but still.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's rare that you see the college coach come in and, like, fully transition into being a really good NBA coach as well.
Yeah.
Brad Stevens is one of those examples. I guess Billy Donovan.
Billy Donovan's been, that's the one that I texted you guys. Billy Donovan. Now, why is Billy Donovan? Billy Donovan's definitely one. Billy Donovan's been there 5 years, I want to say. Never has he won fewer than 47 games.
Mm-hmm.
Now you say, well, what's the difference between somebody like Beilein and Donovan or Calipari, who failed his first time with the Nets?
Yep.
He was there for three seasons, I believe two of them. One was a decent season, the other two, one was awful, and they were two of the three were pretty bad. The difference with Donovan is he was drafted by a team with a great GM in Sam Presti, stable ownership that stays out of the way and lets the basketball people do their job, and he inherited a pretty good roster.
True.
So Billy Donovan can coach. If John Beilein inherited the Oklahoma City Thunder, they wouldn't be 14-40.
There's something to be said about the... like the style, like you're young and I get this from Brad Stevens. Brad Stevens is young, he's innovative, like he's constantly working at finding what the next thing is or the next iteration of his coaching style.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Beilein at 67, like, is he going to coaching clinics? Is he
I don't know.
Seeking advice? I don't know either. But I'm stereotyping and just basically guessing here.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem like he's that guy. You know what I mean? Maybe he is. Maybe he's not. Whereas a young coach like Brad Stevens knows that he's got to find ways to reinvent who he was from college, because he was relatively young when he got the head coaching job at the Boston Celtics.
He was very young. He was in his 30s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he also had Danny Ainge to shield him. Danny Ainge, Boston Celtic champion, multiple championships there. He accrued all this incredible draft equity. You know, even when things were a little bumpy to start, and even last year with Kyrie, Danny Ainge is the face of that team, the face of the franchise, you know, for right or wrong.
Yeah, so he doesn't take on that other side of it.
Well, yeah, I mean,
That public-facing side.
Danny Ainge doesn't hide, and you need somebody like that to be out in front and center to take some of those arrows that will invariably be slung your way. Mm-hmm. It's just going to come.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, it's a shame, though, because this will be, it's obviously a failure in the NBA, and we'll, like, maybe we'll forget about it quickly, but, you know, you wonder, 67 years old, if you're John Beilein, what's next? Like, do you go back and coach?
Yeah, he's going back.
In college? But
I think
does he want to do it anymore? You know, it's an interesting, like, space that he finds himself in, because I think, would he be valuable for some? Of course he would be, but he was in a great space at Michigan.
Yep.
And obviously he had to let it go. They had a big win over the weekend, by the way, Michigan did. And so you let it over Michigan State. But you let it go, and now what do you do? You know?
Well, I think I tweeted this out this morning. I think you kind of wait and see what Notre Dame does with Mike Bray.
Mm.
Mike Bray's been there since 2000. A long time. And it's gone sideways a little bit for the Irish. And even before it went sideways, there were a lot of, and I'm a big Mike Bray fan. I think he's a very good coach. But there was a lot of regular season accomplishments that weren't mirrored in the postseason.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of early ousters from the NCAA, and I know Irish fans have been a little frustrated with that. Now, I'm not advocating that Notre Dame should fire Mike Bray, but I think that that's one job. If I'm John Beilein, I'm thinking about his style, how he would fit in with boosters, how he would fit in on the campus like Michigan. He'd fit in seamlessly. I think that's a possible fit. You know, I mean, I don't think there's a doubt that that John Beilein's coaching next year. I think he's willing to get back in the game.
I hope so.
He's a coach.
Yeah.
He loves coaching. He loves grinding.
He absolutely does.
You know?
By the way, 22 laps into the second stage of
the
Daytona 500. Martin Truex, started at 11th. He fell back to 35th after the 20 laps in the rain delay yesterday. He now sits in second.
Okay, here we go.
Okay,
Truex. Wouldn't that be something if the Tiki and Tierney Mojo extends to the Daytona 500?
We told him.
We did. We told Scott Drew as well. It worked. He beat the Mountaineers over the weekend by about whatever it was, 10 or 11.
Mm-hmm.
All right, coming up here. So, Mason Rudolph responded. Mike Tomlin responded. Hear what they said and hear what the next step should be from Rudolph's point of view. We'll get that to you coming up. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Okay. Mm. Okay. I mean, that is pretty much all encompassing.
It's as clear as can be, man.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Tomlin got his guys back. And not just because he just has his back because it's his guy. I mean, it's his player.
Which happens with certain things.
Of course. He detailed everything that you needed to detail. The NFL did an investigation. The Browns did an investigation. The Steelers did an investigation. Personal relationships with both his players and the in counterparts in Cleveland. They didn't back Myles Garrett at all. So it's pretty clear that this is Myles Garrett creating something that didn't happen.
Let me ask you a question. What would be worse? How would it be received? Myles Garrett continues to stay, you know, married to the notion that he heard that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or he comes out, whether it's a month or two, and says, you know what? I just said that, you know, however he wants to frame it, but basically insinuating that self-preservation. Whatever,
yeah.
What would be worse for him?
To say, maybe I misheard it. Maybe I'm mistaken.
That would be worse for him.
No, that would be best for
exactly.
him.
Exactly.
To say, maybe I was mistaken. But so here's the thing. I said this last week, BT. I don't think people were thinking about it like this anymore. You know what I mean? I don't think that at the front of my mind, when I heard that Myles Garrett was meeting with Commissioner Goodell about his reinstatement, the thing that I was focused on was, man, Myles Garrett, he almost, you know, could have seriously maimed Mason Rudolph, and he got six games, He seems like a good guy. I think he deserves to be back in the National Football League.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's come back, be fine. Bygones be bygones. Mason Rudolph has already said, you know, I'm good with Myles Garrett. You would think that Myles Garrett is okay with Mason Rudolph. Clearly, he was not. And just let it lay. Instead, he doubles down and reignites a controversy for no reason. And even if I understand that there's a space in his mind where he feels like this actually happened. I have to justify it. And I believe Mason Rudolph actually called me the N-word, then I need to like make it be known.
Yeah.
But it doesn't do anybody any good without proof. And right now he has no proof.
Yeah, you know, and the February 14th interview with Mina Kimes on ESPN, the subtweet over the weekend was pretty interesting here for Mason Rudolph. He wrote, 1,000% false, bold-faced lie. I did not, have not, and would not utter a racial slur. This is disgusting and a reckless attempt to assassinate my character. Now, he can tweet that a million times.
Yep.
A million times. And you know what? At this point, I fully believe Mason Rudolph. I do.
Yeah.
And I was reticent to say that a week ago because I just, in my heart, I still wanted to soar. I don't feel like Myles Garrett's telling the truth. I'm sorry. I don't feel that way. And so I fully believe Mason Rudolph at this point. But no matter how many times Rudolph tweets that or goes on shows, not that he has, and gets to the top of the highest mountain and screams from the bottom of his lungs, nothing will have the impact of a universally respected Super Bowl champion winning, you know, but most importantly, African-American head coach.
Yeah, of course.
Getting his back on the most popular show on TV.
No, I agree.
Like, if it's a white coach, I'm not saying it doesn't help.
Yeah, you're right.
And let's also say this, and I want to say this delicately.
No, that's real.
But this is real, too. Like, if you're Mike Tomlin, if you're not 1,000% sure, I mean, you owe it to the black men in that locker room to make sure that was not said.
Yeah.
So this is not protecting a 27-year-old Big Ben who you can't win a championship with.
Yeah.
This is gathering every ounce of intel, getting on TV and saying, I believe Mason Rudolph. And if he really wanted to be real, he could have said, even though he's not that good of a quarterback. It's not about that. No, I mean, you know, it's about character.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, it's about a character assassination.
Yeah.
So it's not about football. It's about what's right and what's wrong in the world. And that's why Mike Tomlin's special.
Yeah.
He's a leader of men.
Of course he is. And that's why he's always been so successful every stage that he's been at, whether it was in college at William & Mary or now in the National or in Tampa as an assistant. Where did he go for a year? Minnesota? Is Minnesota a defensive coordinator?
Yes.
I don't remember what that – because he was only there for a season, I believe. I don't remember what their season was, but it was immediate once he became head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And that's why the Rooneys in that organization have never faltered in supporting him despite – you know, what some people would say were some down years, even though he never has been below 500, off of expectations for sure, because they've had Super Bowl caliber squads, but haven't gotten, you know, deep into the postseason at times. But it's who he is as a person is why people love him.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just another example of that. And it's why all of his team will always have his back because he has their backs.
And it's a big deal. You know what he did this season. This isn't even the point of the segment. But what he did this season felt like they went 13-3.
That's right. It's miraculous.
Talk about a Herculean effort.
Dude, they were on a third string quarterback.
Oh,
no, wait, fourth string.
No, third.
Wait, didn't they trade one? No, right, fourth.
Who am I missing?
Didn't they trade one of their quarterbacks at the beginning of the season to?
Yes. The kid who played at Tennessee.
Yeah, Josh Dobbs.
Josh Dobbs. They definitely traded Josh Dobbs.
So they had Big Ben.
Yep.
They traded Josh Dobbs.
Yep.
Then they had Mason Rudolph.
Correct.
And then they had Doug Hodges. So they were on their fourth string quarterback at some point throughout the season.
And they made a huge trade.
That's right.
With Minka, you know, not quite midseason. But listen, I wonder, because now there's the thought that, you know, Mason Rudolph has a target on his back around the league.
I don't think he does.
I don't think so. Maybe that dissipated. If there was one, maybe that dissipated today through such an effective presentation and very believable, you know, just delivery by Mike Tomlin.
Yeah.
Do you think, though, for those black players that weren't sure or that said, I'm gonna tattoo this punk. Do you think that they listen?
Yeah, I think they did.
Because I don't mean the guys in the Steelers locker room. I mean around the league. Do you think that really caught the players' ears? Do you think so?
Yeah. I think it changes a little bit because Mike Tomlin doesn't usually go out on a line like this. You just don't. We said this at the top of our show, BT. When's the last time you heard him, like, without talking about a game at a podium or at a practice? He doesn't do this.
He's all football.
He's all football all the time. And he went out of his way to stand up for his guy. So I think it does change it. In a sense, there was an update. John Dorsey just said this, right? Or
John
a little bit ago, the former general
manager. That's what I'm saying, John Dorsey
of the Cleveland Browns. He said that Mason Rudolph, Myles Garrett, intimated to them post game that Mason Rudolph did call him the N-word.
Yeah, but we knew that, or that's not new. We knew that.
Yeah. But he just reiterated.
Oh, so okay, gotcha.
He just reiterated, obviously, as because this is becoming a story again.
Yeah. So Dorsey's got his former players back.
Of course. Of course. So, but not what you expect. The question is, do you think Myles Garrett is a threat to be sued by Mason Rudolph?
I'd sue him.
I would, too.
I would definitely
even if,
sue him.
Even if there's no case there, it's worth suing him.
I would definitely sue because it effectively, listen, actions are stronger than words, and actions could be stronger than tweets. So
yep.
While Mason Rudolph defends his character on social media, by taking the step and pursuing legal recourse, you are now, there is nothing left to be interpreted.
Mm-hmm.
I did not say this, and to the point where I am now suing somebody for slandering and demeaning and destroying my name. Yeah, I believe that he almost has to.
Yeah, you're right, to make it go away.
I would.
I would, too.
You know? Heck, if I could sue Ack for doing a bad update, I mean, it would be,
you'd be rich.
We'd make $30 million a year over here.
You wouldn't be here anymore.
Oh, my God. What's going on with the 500? How's our guy doing?
Which is your guy?
Who do we have on the show the other day?
He's Martin third. Truex. No, he's,
oh,
not,
he's
fourth.
Not fourth.
He just fell to fifth.
He's fading.
As we speak.
Stop talking about him. Stop talking about him, Ack.
Second, fourth, fifth. No, I just moved back up to fourth. Truex, okay. We got Elliott. Kyle Busch is up there in the third spot. Yep. A little Hamlin leading.
Yep.
Look at this.
Denny Hamlin, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Kyle Busch, Martin
Truex. DiBenedetto?
Yeah.
Part-time producer, part-time NASCAR. All right.
Doing a decent job. No wonder why he's not in today.
Exactly.
He's in the Daytona 500.
And he's doing well, apparently. Hey, by the way, Nick Saban compared Tua to two NFL legends. Who are they, and does it make sense? We'll hit that coming up. Axe update is right now. And we'll get to the saving stuff. Here's Ack.
It's time to answer our Ask the Pros question of the day, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Today's question is from Anthony Hale at Bedroid. Should the NBA All-Star Game keep the new format permanently going forward, or just let it stay a standard game? I think they should keep this new Elam ending format because it's an exhibition game. You know that it's not like the real thing, no matter how you look at it. Usually it's not that entertaining either. This made it somewhat entertaining, and guys played hard all the way to the final whistle, even if there was very little defense. So, yeah, keep it forward. And as I talked about in our first hour, maybe make it part of the G League. Why not? Don't forget, you can submit a question by going to cbssportsradio.com/askthepros, or you could tweet us at CBS Sports Radio using the hashtag AskThePros. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Tiki Barber, CBS Sports Radio. BT had to dip out because BT is heading over to call the St. John's Xavier game. Samter, what was the schedule after Xavier tonight for St. John's? It's like ranked team after ranked team after ranked team. I mean, St. John's in the Big East. BT calls their games for the radio. Who do they have after Xavier?
So after Xavier, who's no slouch to begin with, but then they have number 16 Seton Hall, number 12 Villanova, number 15 Creighton, number 21 Butler, and the number 19 Marquette.
Ouch. So hopefully they get a win tonight because it might be tough sled for the Johnnies for the rest of the way. Don't forget Tuesday night. That's tomorrow night at 8:30 Eastern, 5:30 Pacific. Sixth ranked Dayton heads to VCU to battle the Rams in an A-10 showdown only on CBS Sports Network. One more segment to finish up here. We have the blast as we always do. Since BT is not here, Samter is going to take his turn helping us out. Can you read today, Samter, or are you two still hungover in the weekend?
Well, I don't think I can read any day. I don't think it has anything to do with the weekend.
All right, let's
but
get
I'll
to,
do my best.
Let's get to the blast.
So many topics, so little time. We give you five stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for the blast with Tiki and Tierney.
So Nick Saban, talking about his former quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa, compared him to Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers. It's pretty good company right there, especially considering he hasn't played a snap in the NFL. Who does Tua remind you of?
I don't know if I can say Drew Brees, because Drew is so much about precision and, you know, getting to his 3 or 5 or 7 step drops and getting the ball out. It's not about athleticism and moving around in the pocket. Maybe he's a little bit of Aaron Rodgers, but I'd say he's a lot like Russell Wilson as well. Not that he's probably bigger than Russell Wilson, but because he's a lefty, it doesn't look the same. But what Tua does really well, at least when he's healthy, and that's been a big if over the course of his last couple of seasons with those high ankle sprains and the surgeries that he's had on his lower extremities, when he moves and creates space in the pocket and then finds his streaking wide receivers downfield, that's Russell Wilson-esque. He throws a good ball, a good deep ball like Russell Wilson does as well. I'd say Russell Wilson, but if Nick Saban wants to say Aaron Rodgers, I can buy that one.
So we talked earlier about teams sending fewer and fewer coaches to the scouting combine, which might hurt Antonio Brown because AB says he plans to meet with teams at the combine, explain himself, and hopefully get back on their good graces. Now, there might be fewer guys to talk to, but here's the question. Since this is a showcase for college athletes who need an opportunity to get seen by NFL coaches, players, and scouts, do you think that AB should be allowed to attend to talk to teams, or is this a good way for the NFL to get him an opportunity?
It's an interesting question, because I actually think I said this a couple of weeks ago, that Antonio Brown, maybe it was in one of my sports minutes, Antonio Brown needs to go make his case not to the media or to the fans, to us listening on to his social media accounts or wherever he gets his voice out there, but he needs to go talk directly to coaches and general managers. And the one place to go do that where we know they're all going to aggregate is the combine. But to answer this question, your question directly, Samter, should he be allowed? No, I don't think he should be allowed to go into the combine. If he wants to go hang out in Indianapolis and find where these guys are, like go meet them for hopefully a soda and not a drink so he gets crazy or something like that, then absolutely. If he could set up meetings, because that also happens at the combine. It's kind of like a big networking event as well, as all these the league meetings and everything football related where everybody aggregates. If he can find a way to pull some sit-down and quiet time with some GMs and head coaches that are going to be there, a lot of the assistants are not going to be there. That's what we hit earlier. Absolutely, he should do that. And be honest with you, I think it'd be a good look for him to just be hanging around trying to set up meetings with teams and coaches and executives so that he can tell his side of the story. But letting him into the combine, where he's certainly going to distract away from these young kids trying to make names for themselves, no, they shouldn't be allowed to go in there into the facility itself. But he should be able to hang out in Indianapolis, just like anybody could hang out in Indianapolis.
The interesting side of this is that Drew Rosenhaus kind of dropped AB, so who's the representative who's going to be out there reaching out to teams?
Same track. You know, it's interesting. I think it's actually better if it's not someone reaching it. Like, he should do this himself. Like, just take the
initiative.
Personally
walk up to coaches, GMs,
it's easy to get their contact information, right? You call up whatever organization. Say it's the Giants. You call up the front office of the Giants. You say, hey, this is Antonio Brown. I would love to have a sit down with John Mara or Steve Tisch or Dave Gettleman if they're going to be in Indianapolis. Do you mind if you connect me with them? And just let it play out. If they say no, then they say no. But at least you're making the effort personally and not trying to communicate through an intermediary, which could be, you know, just being a sycophant. So I like that he's thinking about doing this, but don't let him into the combine itself.
So the Rising Stars Challenge, we've talked about the All-Star Game, we've talked about the dunk contest, but the Rising Stars Challenge was actually really fun on Friday. We saw Ja Morant throwing alley-oops to Zion. We saw Zion breaking rims. It was, like, bent at halftime. They had to fix it.
That.
I mean, it's like Shaquille O'Neal-esque. It's amazing. But one of the funniest things I thought that came out of it was his former Duke teammate, R.J. Barrett, missed a three-pointer. Then Zion kind of talked a little trash on him and then had a wide-open dunk on the other side, and R.J. Barrett fouled him. And people were furious at R.J. for fouling Zion in an exhibition game that was supposed to just showcase some dunking and be fun. So what do you think? Like the competitiveness of taking down a guy who's trash-talking even a friend? Or, hey, it's an all-star game, it's an exhibition, like, let them have some fun.
No, man, let them play hard, as long as they don't hurt each other. Hey, look, these guys are elite athletes, so I think they can they can understand how to play rough but not hurt each other. It's a little bit dicey because Zion has been hurt for really the entirety of his NBA career up until a couple of weeks ago. But I didn't mind this at all. I thought it was actually interesting and engaging. It creates this, it's a faux rivalry because obviously being former teammates and striving together last year at Duke, they have an affection for one another. But I thought it was cool. I don't mind this at all. This is no different than when, you know, like I'd play Rondé in regular season games. He'd do extra things just to make it look good. So just making it look good and it's all in fun, I love it.
If you guys were ever at a Pro Bowl together, would you just run him over?
Yeah, but we were on the same team. Like the great thing about the Pro Bowl was that we always wanted to be teammates again. The only time we got to be teammates was at the Pro Bowl. So it was cool. Like there was no real issue. The only real issue was in the regular season games, five of which we played. I won three. He won two. Actually, maybe it was three and three. I can't remember. Yeah, because he didn't play in one. So, yeah, I have the edge.
Well, so moving on. So Javi Baez of the Cubs admitted that he and other Cubs players weren't motivated well enough last year, saying they didn't prepare properly for games. They wouldn't go out for BP into the field. They'd stay in the tunnel and work out and hit balls in the tunnel, but they wouldn't actually go out and prepare for the game properly, that when they finally got out there, they weren't ready to go emotionally, physically, and they said that things need to change and they're going to change. Now, here's the question, though. When it comes to professional athletes especially,
yeah,
and motivation, do you put that on the player himself or is that on the coach like Joe Maddon to get them properly motivated?
God, this is an interesting question because in some – like if you have a young, inexperienced team that hadn't won a World Series a couple of years ago, I would put it on the coach or the skip, the manager here. And it's his job to be assertive and getting these guys minding – you know, their P's and Q's and doing the right things and preparing the right ways because they were still striving for something. But for a team that has some veterans, even though they're young veterans and accomplished veterans, this is a locker room thing. This is a clubhouse thing. This should have been on, you know, the Chris Bryants of that team. And in some ways, while it's easy to point the finger at Joe Maddon, and I think that that's what ownership did at the end of last season, this is on the guys in the locker room. Just somebody had to step up and be like the professional in the room. And if he saw it getting lazy, and especially if it was that laziness was showing up on the field of play, that's on the players, man. I know it's easy to point to the skip, but you're grown men making a ton of money. Do the right thing on how to prepare.
Now, this last one was admittedly meant for BT, but I'm sure that you can still opine on this. Tiger finished dead last at the Genesis Open this week.
Dead last of those that made the cut, let's not forget.
Correct, but, I mean, if you really break it down, he had the highest total score. So I guess technically, which I think is an interesting question also. I mean, if he made the cut, is he technically dead last? But I guess kind of because he did have the highest overall accumulated score. He had scores of 76 and 77 on Saturday and Sunday, respectively. So I don't know how much of it you actually watched, but what do you think went wrong for Tiger?
Well,
especially after his three top 10 finishes this year already.
Let's not forget, Tiger is not young. Tiger is 43 years old because I think he's a year or a little, like half a year behind me. So maybe he's digging on 44 right now. So when you're 44 years old, you've had major reconstruction on your knee, on your Achilles, on your back. Some days, you're just going to be off, right? And there's nothing you can do about it. Like, physically, your body is going to feel achy. Let's also not forget that he was hosting this tournament, this Genesis Open. So he had hosting duties along with getting ready to prepare. And so not only physically could he been off kilter a little bit, emotionally and mentally, he probably wasn't as dialed in as he usually is. But I think at his age and the injuries that he's had, this is just going to happen. Some weeks, really, he's just going to be off. And you're going to get these blow-up moments where he physically can't focus and mentally he can't focus and he can't find his stroke. I think it's all correctable things. And when he's dialed in, like I'm sure we'll see at the majors, including and especially the Masters, he'll have these great moments. But I think for Tiger Woods, for the rest of his non-seniors tour, champions tour, I should say, golf career, you're going to see this roller coaster. He's going to be really good some weeks. Other weeks, he's going to be horrible. He's going to be really good some weeks. Some weeks, he's going to be middle of the road. And he's going to be horrible. And he's going to be really good. I think you're going to see this roller coaster with Tiger Woods. And it's expected. It happens with age and the way that his body has been beat up over the last 20 years.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
We mentioned this when BT was here about the All-Star game and this Elam ending. And I don't know, we didn't get your take on this. Your takes on this. Did you like it, D-Cell? The Elam ending. Did you like the race towards 157 points? Because it was 133, which was Giannis's team was leading, plus 24 for Kobe Bryant, in homage to him the late Kobe Bryant. I loved it. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was engaging. Did you like it, or was it just kind of eh?
I like that it was competitive again. I don't necessarily love what the rules changes were.
Yeah.
But I liked the result that it made it competitive.
And because it's an All-Star game, Samter, do you agree?
Yeah, I think it works great in an All-Star game. I really feel like it could work long-term in some areas. I just don't know how you implement it.
Yeah, I don't know how you implement it in the regular NBA. But for an All-Star game, I think it's amazing. Because the All-Star game it's nonsense otherwise. And so when you create something that's competitive and fun, and not only do we as fans enjoy it, because you're not beholden to the clock, you're more like watching who's going to get closest to the score. And by the way, this was the closest All-Star game since 2010, in a decade. They won by a bucket, really, a free throw. So I love this because it's a non-regular occurrence. It's a one-off, essentially, and when the LeBrons and the ADs and the Kawhis and Giannis's and all these guys, they're playing like aggressively with urgency to try to win a game, it makes us engaged. If they're playing just like lackadaisical, like just, all right, oh, we got a minute left in the game, let's just jack up, you know, 35 footers and maybe it'll go in. That's not interesting. I like the Elam ending. It was our Ask the Pros question of the day today, actually. Should it be consistent going forward with the Elam ending? My answer, if it was me, would be yes. The Daytona 500 getting ready to go into stage 3. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Maybe. BT doesn't like racing, but I do. Thank you, guys. Have a good holiday. Peace.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.